It's time again for A Life Well Lived, A Physician's Guide to Wealth with James Nutter. James is a fiduciary financial planner with IM Wealth, whose mission is to help physician families take control of their money so they can live more meaningful lives. If you have an idea for James to explore, please email podcast@financialresidency.com. Now sit back and relax while we dive into today's financial insights with James Nutter.
All right, everyone. Thank you for being here and for your time and attention, as always, as I know that's the most valuable thing that you have. And we're here for another episode of the A Life Well Lived, A Physician's Guide to Wealth podcast. And today we're going to be talking about some physician employment contract hacks, mainly focusing on the most critical steps for negotiating your second contract as an attending physician. We have Spencer Lichtai here, a health law attorney local to my hometown, Grand Rapids, Michigan. And Spencer is a health law attorney with Smith, Hoy, Rice, and Rogge. And we're going to talk about, you know, every time you renew your contract, you have a chance to get a better deal. You've proven yourself as an invaluable asset to your team. And we often see that there's not a lot of real world training on employment contracts for physicians. Even myself, my first contract when I was 22 years old, I ended up finding that there were some sales quotas intertwined within it that I no longer have. And I ended up pretty frustrated about it because I didn't know I was 22 and just signed the dang thing. So I think everybody deserves to know, you deserve to know, you've invested hundreds of thousands of dollars into your education and tons of hours and training. So you absolutely deserve to have the right tools and skills to get an equitable contract that aligns with your contributions to the team, and also more importantly, your lifestyle. So we have Spencer here. And Spencer, tell us briefly, what led you to become a health law attorney, and or what are some like fun things that you've learned about yourself or learned about the world of contracts since becoming one?
Well, first of all, thank you very much, James, for having me on here. I greatly appreciate it. I'd done one of these kind of sessions before for your guys' masterclass, and it was great and it was fun. And just like you kind of said, I love the fact and love the opportunity to be able to get this information out and to help out physicians, because you're right. They deserve to have some type of knowledge about contracts, especially considering how impactful they are for their professions, whether they want them to be or not. But yeah, just kind of a little backstory. Yeah, so I'm here in Grand Rapids at Smith, Hoy, Rice, and Rogge. I'm a partner here in our health law department. I got into the game of health law specifically because I loved medicine. I loved healthcare. I didn't want to be a doctor. It was not my thing. And if there's any doctors here, I really hope there was that drive to save people, do medicine. And I just didn't have that. So when it kind of push came to shove, I wanted to stay in medicine. And I kind of found another way that I can help physicians that is not literally being among them. So I got into this. And everything I've done so far, I have enjoyed thoroughly, which is saying something considering I've done a lot of stuff that most people would probably consider very boring, including physician contracts, but they scratch an itch, we'll go with. So I'm happy to do it, and I'm happy to provide those kind of services. At my practice, we work both with individual physicians, we work with physician groups, and we work with healthcare providers themselves, including hospitals, FQHCs, clinics, anything kind of across the board. So we sort of have that experience of contract work on both sides, which has allowed me an opportunity to know what happens, how they're created, and what kind of give and take physicians and providers can kind of work with, which just trying to give back as much as I kind of can.
I love that. Awesome. Awesome. And you're not alone. I imagine there's many physicians and our clients that think what I do is extremely boring and crazy, right? But I say to, you know, all of our clients, like, I might faint at the sight of blood or seeing inside a cut open human. So anyways, a lot of respect for what everybody does. And I always say that's what makes the world go round. There's someone that loves everything, right?
Exactly. You know, if I can help take off that focus, because, you know, I assume most got into medicine because they want to do medicine. They want to practice medicine. Contracts are regretfully a bigger component of it than they probably want. And if I can kind of make that a little bit less of a toll and get them back to focusing on what they actually want to do, that's a win for me. So it's not just physicians. This applies kind of sometimes to APPs, nurses, and anybody else kind of in the profession themselves. So it all kind of covers itself.
We all got to help to make the world a better place. Let's dive in head first here. I loved when we were talking about what you wanted to talk about today, you organized it into the four W's of what to look out for, where you're working, what you're doing, where you're getting compensated, what happens when you leave. So you wanted to jump in and maybe explain a little bit further on the four of those, and we can see where the conversation goes.
Yeah, it's important to know that this is your kind of your second contract. And James sort of worded it already that, you know, you've already got a little bit more of experience, you've done your groundwork, you've gotten your practice kind of up and running, you're a little bit more familiar of it as compared to kind of that new physician right out of residency, right out of internships or fellowships. At that point, first contract I got for a legal job, I signed that. I was good. I didn't look at it at all. And a lot of physicians are the same way. They've been in debt. They've been in school for so long. All they want to do is get out and practice. That's all they care about. Your second contract's a different beast because you have some more of that experience. You may know what you want and what is important to you, and you can utilize those things when you're looking at what you want in that second contract. So kind of just run a brief summary of it. You know, this four W's are just kind of an organizational component of it or a strategy for it. So where you work, you probably took that first job. You probably had a couple offers, give or take, but you took that first job, and wherever that is, you now have an experience with that type of provider. But it's important to know whether or not that type of provider worked for you. You know, if it was a hospital, did you like the structure of the hospital? Was it more of a physician group? Did you like the fact that it was mainly operated by other physicians or other practitioners? Or did you want a little bit more structure? Was it private practice? For some people, that's how it goes. Was it an academic medical center? You know, the second contract is a wonderful time for you to adjust and switch types of providers and employment professions, employers at that time, those type of sites that you're at. You know, if you just want to get that other experience, that's also something to know and what comes with each of those sectors there. So hospitals, obviously, you're going to have a lot of the stability. You're going to have a lot of those support coming from the administration and the other facilities. You know, you're going to have that perk, I guess you could say, of knowing where you're working, right? You're working at that hospital, at their offices. But on the same time, you're also going to be an employed physician, most likely, and you're going to have to deal with the consequences that go with that. Physician groups, you know, it's much more of you have a chance of buying into ownership with it. And that becomes a whole component. That's something very important because now you are personally and financially invested in that group, which could mean a number of things. You know, it means that things start mattering, right? Not just you, but your partners matter and what they're doing matters. How you get paid can kind of be a little bit more variant. It's less of here's your salary, good to go. It's a little bit more of those investment components of it. And that's something that James and I know, but it's something to consider. And then, you know, academic medical centers, you know, then you're tying that into educational component or a research component of it. That's what you're looking for. Those are the places that you want to utilize it, but be aware that there are some kind of give and takes that come with it. The next step there would be, what do you want to do? And this is kind of, you know, this goes back to sort of, what are you really looking for your contract? As a new physician, you're coming in, you're grinding services, you're seeing patients, you're getting used to everything. It's just kind of that initial, just getting everything going. Now that you have that experience behind you, you know, you can look into what really did kind of speak to you. Did you really just like the clinical side? That's all you want to do. I just want to do clinical stuff. I want to do patient stuff. That's all I care about. If that's the case, make sure that your second contract is focused as much as on clinical as possible. You know, ignore any opportunities or any issues with things such as admin stuff or things that aren't providing that patient care. That's something that's important to make sure that taking up more space than you want it to. It kind of applies if you find other things sort of outside the immediate patient care that does matter. If you do like the administrative component of it, if you like, you know, kind of managing service lines or doing some medical directorships or something like that, this is a perfect opportunity in your second contract to see if you can include those in there. Because the most important thing I can always say to physicians is make sure that you are being paid. And it's obviously the next W, but make sure you're getting paid for what you're doing. And if they're paying you a salary that's to be a, let's say, general surgeon, you know, that's a clinical component of being a general surgeon. So they're paying you to do that. If they're also making you also do administrative stuff, make sure you're getting paid for that administrative stuff. Because that's an extra component. And it may seem like, oh, it's fine. It's not going to be that big of a deal. Let's say they set your schedule and they say, you're going to work 40 hours a week, which is a very realistic number for all physicians. And they say, out of that 40, 36 is clinical, 4 is administrative. So 10% of what you work on is supposed to be administrative, according to that. If at any point in time you start seeing that you're spending 20, 30% of your time on administrative stuff, you're not getting paid for that. And that's something that's kind of an important component of it. And it's also, if you see, you know, medical staff leadership or committees, you know, those are the type of things to look at and see if you can't get paid for them and make sure that they're included in your contract, because then you have those roles. And if it's important to you, then that's what matters. If there's any type of specific specialties or research, again, get them in your contract because you want it in writing. That's always the most important thing I can kind of say is, you know, it's great to hear that your employer's like, no, don't worry. We'd love to give you this or let you do this. And that's great. 95% of the time, that's going to be fine. Get it in writing all the time. Always have it in writing. Because if they don't, you have something that you can point to, something that you can hold them to. And then this is kind of a weird one. It kind of goes back. If you find yourself wanting to teach, or if you find yourself wanting to do expert testimony or work at clinics, like a free clinic or Doctors Without Borders, any of those type of things, if you find yourself wanting to do those, make sure that your second contract provides you the flexibility to do those things. A lot of contracts have restrictions on what you can do that is outside of the hospital that involves medicine. Make sure that there are exceptions included into that contract for those type of services. If you want to teach, make sure that contract does not stop you from teaching. And that's just kind of the important thing. It's making sure you have a little bit more of that leeway for it. If you were good and they liked you there, they're going to be willing to kind of give and take here on your second contract. Most employers, especially hospitals and major facilities, they have pretty boilerplate, same contracts, same employment agreements that they have for the physicians and for nurse practitioners, the same one. They try not to change a ton of it. If you can add in little things here to make it yours and to make it more custom, as long as it's not something that's going to be greatly inhibitive to them or, you know, cause major issues, usually it's reasonable to put those forth. It's in your best nature. It is a negotiation. It is a contract. It's between two parties. And while one is, you could argue, in a much better position, they probably drafted the contract. They're the ones that are controlling the money and they have the clients and all that. It's still supposed to be a mutual thing. So if you want something in there, try to get it in there, especially if it's something that's important to you.
That was all incredible information. And I didn't even realize you had to get that into the specific what you're going to be like doing and have it spelled out in there. Do you sometimes see like if it's not spelled out, they might end up doing like, let's say they don't want to do as much admin and they want to do more teaching and clinical. If it's not in their contract, they could, you know, technically I'm sure someone from leadership could say, hey, actually we expect you to do XYZ much admin. And if it's not in the contract, do you see that quite often?
And that's exactly what the risk is. Like, again, like 95% of the time, it's not going to be an issue, right? 95% of the time, it's usually fine.
Right.
But if there is that issue, if they do want you to suddenly say, let's say you're working for, again, like a general surgeon, or if you're working for radiology or something like that, and they suddenly, we feel like we just need somebody supervising, providing these kind of extra stuff here. Would you be willing to do that? And then you're a player, you want to be there, you want to help, you know, it's going to benefit it. And you're saying, yeah, dope, I'd be happy to do it. That's great. But then now you're doing extra stuff that you're not getting paid for. And a lot of that stuff, especially for salaried employees, a lot of that stuff is going to be inherently going to be stuff that other employed individuals should be doing or could be doing. So any type that you could save money, like why would we pay a medical director when we could possibly get our physicians to do everything a medical director does, but not pay them the price for a separate medical director or a set of medical directorship pay. And then, you know, it's not a vicious thing. It's just kind of, if the people are doing it, let them do it. If you have to pay them, if they ask to be paid for it, then you may need to consider paying for them. And again, it may not come every time. It doesn't have to be big stuff. You know, if you're like, you have to do your record keeping, right? You got to fill up your charts. No hospital, no facility is going to pay you separately to do your charting. That's part of the job. But when you start doing supervision or when you start doing administrative stuff or looking at inventories, when you start handling more of those things that you feel are purely administrative and not clinical at all, that's when you start getting more to that territory. And if, especially for the stuff you want to do, you just never want there to be a situation that you're doing something that you love and something that you care about, and then they find out and they have a legal recourse to stopping you to do that. And if you can avoid that, that's the best thing you can do. And when in doubt, the contract is what governs your employment. Those are the rules. There's statutes, there's laws, there's regulations on state and federal side. But the contract, ultimately, if there's ever a dispute, the first thing that's going to matter is that contract. So get as much as you can into it and make sure that you know what's in it. And I know that it's boring and it's long and it's filled with stupid legal jargon that I am guilty myself of putting in there. But it matters. And knowing what's in there is so huge. And it's not something that they teach you in med school. They don't. Some med schools, I think I've heard, have picked it up. They've talked about a little bit of the legal components of it. But you just, you don't do it. You don't get that information from them. And Usually the employer's attorneys aren't going to sit there and educate you on it themselves because they kind of want their advantage there in the negotiations. They want you to just sign because they know what's in it. That's why we have these services. We review them and we can just try to educate physicians as much as they can on what they're actually entering into.
Yeah, absolutely. And even if they were taught it in med school, like a one time, or even that'd be like you quizzing me on my like undergrad biology courses that I took right now.
Yeah, right, exactly.
I have no idea.
Well, and especially, med students are in there and these aren't going to be on their big exams, their certifications, right? They don't care about, oh, cool contract. I'll deal with that in the future when I have a contract. Right now, I have to focus on microbiome. I have to focus on anatomy. I have to focus on those big topics. So it makes sense. It's a total wash. And that's just kind of these type of things, just getting some type of education, giving some type of a reason to just sort of read over stuff on it. It's important.
What you said too about the healthcare systems not educating it, I won't get too into the weeds with that, but all that I'll say is we've had some difficulty promoting topics like this to healthcare systems that we partner with. And I'll just leave it at that. So that's why we're here. And that's why this podcast exists. So thank you, Tammy, if you're listening right now, for creating this platform for us. And jumping back, were we on the four W's? Did we get through all of them or were there a couple?
I think we're on compensation, which is kind of, it's a big deal because everybody wants it. By this point, you're rolling in money. As a physician, you're not probably, but you're at least been paid a few years at that point. This is kind of, you're at this point in your career really where compensation and what you're just kind of getting compensated for in your contract can matter. So there's usually a couple different structures that you get paid employed physicians. There's always like an annual salary that's just kind of a flat salary. There can be kind of bonuses for productivity, for certain incentives. But usually if it's just a flat salary, it's a flat salary. That can be nice because if you have a down year or a down quarter, you know what you're getting paid. It's not that jump. And especially as a young physician, when you're getting to learn the ropes, you're building your practice, you're learning charting, you're learning to be efficient, that guaranteed salary can be really nice. However, when your second contract, once you've gotten that, your feet under you, the productivity, there's compensation that can be completely productivity driven. And it's legal, it's allowed under everything. The concept is basically the more efficient you are, the more services you do, and usually the better that you do those, the more you do, the more you get paid to a certain extent, obviously. But those options, while they do look much more volatile at times, if you know that you're working at an employer that has that, you know that you're going to have the patients and you know that you're going to have the services, you can make a lot more money potentially from that. The employers want, right? They want you to do as much as possible and bill as much as possible and to see as many patients as possible and provide as much good care as possible. They're happy to reward you for doing that. So if that matches your lifestyle, it's this concept of, it's your second one. So maybe, you've got resources available to you to kind of put in that grind for that extra final financial component, then it's something that you should look into. It's something that is possible. And a lot of providers will push that on there anyway to make their physicians make sure that they are trying to do as much as possible and be as efficient as possible. But if you're ever provided those options, think of what the risks, you have the volatility, but you have a chance to get more compared to having that stable thing, but knowing that you're probably going to be set at that amount no matter what. And the same thing kind of goes with benefits. PTO, there's some people, if it's important to you and if you feel like you really want to get more PTO than you've had before, this is the time. Your second contract it's time to mention that, push that back on it. If you found that yourself, your second contract, if you feel like you're not, maybe you're not in a metropolitan area, maybe I could be making more if I am in the metropolitan area, or vice versa, if you want to go rural or something like that. These are the type of considerations to know of for your compensation, because it will be reflected, depending on where you are working and where that location is, especially if maybe there's a high demand for your specialty in a certain part of the state or even part of the country, if you're contemplating moving to that extent. These are the type of things that you need to sort of focus on. Do you want to make sure that your professional association fees are covered or CME is covered or, those type of things? I've even seen weird contracts that point that living conditions for the time that they're working there are covered. Are you make sure if you're doing a lot of on-call and it's something that's unique and it's something that is pretty extensive, see if you can't get paid separately for your on-call. Why not? I mean, worth doing. This is the time you don't have to just kind of sit down and accept whatever they offer you at this point. If you have prioritizations and things that matter to you or that you want to try to kind of squeeze as much as you can out of your job. And then, yeah, and I mean, the last thing there is just kind of what happens when you leave. And this is much more kind of specific by the contracts, but it's something that I always want people to consider because it's something that, you know, you enter into a contract, you never really think about leaving it for most people. But contracts 90% of the time have language and restrictions and terms and conditions on how they can be terminated, how they can end, and what happens when they do. You know, the most common thing that people know about is non-competes, which depending on where you're at in the country, they may or may not be more significant. But knowing those non-competes and knowing, you know, if you want to stay in the same city and you're working for one of the major players in that city, and you're like, okay, well, I'm going to jump ship to another player, they're going to pay me more, that's great. Make sure that you can, and then you're not going to deal with that non-compete. It's those type of things. There's also like non-solicitation things that are also components in there, which are basically you can't, you know, if you're working with like a great nurse or another coworker and you're like, hey, I'm jumping ship, you should jump ship with me. You can't do that, usually under contracts. But those are the things to just know what you are. And because this is the time to negotiate it, because you can attack non-competes in two areas. You can attack them in the contract themselves. And then if they are ever tried to be enforced, that's when you can fight them back. But it's a lot more expensive and a lot tougher to fight them in the second once they're being enforced. So if you can try to kind of sweep, you know, maybe they set it to 2 years, see if you can't fight it to one. You know, maybe if it's extended to 20 miles, see if you can't push it down to 10. You know, these are the type of areas that you may want to, depending on what you're looking for. The other kind of things are stuff like tail coverage or professional liability insurance. You know, once you leave, are they covering any type of claims that may have happened during that window before you join your next employer? You know, not a lot of employers pay for that. Some of them do. Maybe you can negotiate that to happen. And then the last thing is objectively, and this is just kind of important, just kind of going forward, if you know that there may be a chance that you don't stay for the entire term of whatever that new agreement is going to be, do you want that contract to be a little bit more flexible? Do you want it to be a one-year term as compared to a three-year term? Or do you want the, you know, most of them have a certain notice period to provide that says, you know, hey, in order to get out of this contract for no reason at all, there's no punishment, it's not for cause, you know, either party can terminate it with 180-day notice. It's 180 days, you know, that's a long window. And you maybe push that down to 90 if you want that flexibility. These are just kind of the things that you want to be aware of, because they're all going to be things that are going to matter. And you want to be aware of them now as compared to, you're like, oh, crap, you know, my significant other one, I have to move. I have to move immediately. I got to get out of this contract ASAP. You never want to just hope that your employer is going to be completely on board with that, because it's a big deal for them too. You know, a physician leaving their practice is inevitably going to leave a hole that they have to fill. And that's something, you know, that's also part of it. Do you have to provide services during that notice period? You know, is it an option? These are all the things, you know, especially, and this is just one more thing, is there any compensation tied to how long you're working? You know, does it require you, in order to get that productivity bonus, do you have to work until the end of the year? These are the things to kind of think about before, you know, before you really, while you're crafting the contract, because if it ever actually matters, you'll at least have something, some type of knowledge of it beforehand.
Yeah, I love everything that you're saying. And I think some of my main takeaways so far is, I know it's a lot of legal jargon, and I understand because I've read through my business partner and I's partner agreement, and it's very similar. And there's definitely a lot of back and forth, but it sounds to me like know and understand your contract, step one. And then step two, when you're going to sign your second contract, feel comfortable knowing that you can semi-customize it, or at least ask for things that you want. Is that what, I mean, those are kind of some of my take, not that you could like have the free flow to just customize it, but it sounds like from what I'm gathering from you, it doesn't hurt to ask if you want certain things or enjoy certain areas of work or want a change in lifestyle or be paid for call or, you know, all the different things. Those are some of my takeaways. I mean, in simpler terms than everything you said.
And you're completely right. I apologize. I have a way of going inherently jargony, and I hate it. Yeah, but you're right. And it's one of those things that just, you know, this isn't an iTunes terms of service. You know, this is something that you should take the time to read. You know, it's an apartment lease. You should make sure you know what it is. And most of it's going to be boring. Most of it's going to be really boilerplate or just very normal stuff. Some contracts are really simple from some employers. Some are really long. You know, I've seen 3 pages, I've seen 90 pages. It's a whole thing. And I get it. It's boring. It's not fun. You can hire separate legal counsel to review it and make sure that's a very common thing that people do just to make sure that they don't have to do it. But even as an attorney for it, the first thing I want to do is educate you on it because you're the one that's actually going to be dealing with it. But yeah, but in terms of the negotiation component of it, yeah, that's sort of, it's inherently going to be a negotiation. And the first thing that, I mean, that's kind of the first step is recognizing that, you know, just because they're employing you does not mean that this is not, again, a mutual negotiation for the contract. There is a physician shortage. There is every specialty. They want you. You know, even if they are a powerhouse, big, super conglomerate healthcare system, if they are offering you a job, they want it. They have a role, they have a spot that they need filled with a physician and they want you there. They have picked you. Know that. Now, that doesn't mean go in there and be like, you're going to pay me this and you're going to do this and I am the one that rules everything. I mean, you can go for it, swag on. But, you know, it's just, but like, be aware that you have authority. You have some oomph behind you. You have some grounds that you can move on. And also, you know, it's a prioritization. You know, if you want to make sure that, you know, you have a young family or something like that, or you just don't want to work yourself to death, PTO, if that's one of your priorities, the best way I can kind of phrase it is in these negotiations, you know, the employer's not going to want to adjust it a ton because they want to do as little as possible, or they want to pay their lawyers as little as possible to adjust these contracts.
Right.
And they are going to be, it's a tolerance thing. Their tolerance for changing things is inevitably going to go down the more that is changed. So prioritize what you want to change, what it matters the most that is adjusted and is included in that contract, and fight for those first. And then, you know, after that, if it seems like they're working with it, then you can throw in the stuff. You're like, yeah, and you know, and also it kind of sucks that I have to pay for parking. So would it be possible to get that in there? And you're like, it's not a huge deal, but maybe they'll throw it in there. Maybe they won't. But it, you know, if you have that prioritization and you win on those things, then it's much more of a relaxed concept of not getting, maybe you don't get everything, but if you get what matters to you the most, or at least get some type of give towards it, then that's going to be a huge step. And especially, and this is a big thing, especially if you're, you know, if you're in a specialty that is very much in demand, or if you're in an area that your profession is in demand. And, you know, I'm not saying go in there and hold them hostage with it, but know that only increases your negotiating power and use it. They're using it on the same side as well, because, you know, they're the ones that drafted it. There's stuff in there that they intentionally put in there, not to be malicious or anything, but they put it in there because they know it's in there and they wanted it there. The least you can do is kind of try to fight back as somewhat as you can.
Totally. And I always like thinking about it like, you know, a superstar athlete who arguably you've maybe worked harder than in your career to get to where you are right now. Like, if they're taking the time to negotiate the heck out of their contract with their agent and their team, yeah, then, you know, why not you, whether on your own or with a health law attorney like Spencer or whomever? And maybe I'm just saying that so we can pretend like we're superstar athletes here for a minute. But, you know,
I appreciate it. It's really helping my self-confidence.
But, you know, perfect segue to, I feel like, you know, transitioning into negotiation and maybe some tactics around it. And thank you for everything you've shared so far. So how can physicians pursue like a conversation around negotiation that's constructive, that's diplomatic, essentially meaning that it's mutually beneficial for the physician, it's mutually beneficial for the team? I know there can be some, like, you know, some hesitation of like not wanting to bother anybody, not wanting to alienate yourself from the team if you get certain benefits because you ask for it and the team doesn't get them, you know, yeah, the individuals you're working around. So how can you have a constructive negotiation conversation that's mutually beneficial? Is there certain language you use? Is there like a step-by-step process you use? Or I'm sure it's very specific.
Yeah.
Can you talk on that at all?
It really is. You know, it depends on the vibe. It depends on the type of employer. It depends on, you know, if you're part of a medical group, how supportive that medical group is. I mean, kind of, I'm always a big advocate for, you know, employees and peers always sharing as much as you can. Now, a lot of these agreements have confidentiality provisions. You're not supposed to share a lot of it. I'm not advising you to share all of it. I also realized I didn't do my waiver at the beginning of this whole thing. I am not providing, nothing that I'm saying in this podcast is intended to be, you know, legal. We'll do that. We'll do that. Anyway.
We can add it. Yeah, we can.
Yeah, we'll get it. We'll add it in there.
I'll make a note.
Yeah, I just whoops. Anyway, you know, I'm not telling you to breach those, but you know, communicate with it, because you don't. You know, you never want to be that person that's getting paid way less than your peers, or getting paid way more. Because I mean, either way, there's something that's going on and it shouldn't. That being said, you know, when you're taking on the negotiations, you know, it's so first of all, you know, normally in your contract it has a designated term. About the time around that last year of it, whether it's a designated one or if it's automatic renewal, that's when usually your employer is going to want to try to start working that out or just figure it out. And ideally for them, they're going to want you to just like not contribute at all, right? Ideally for them, it's just like they're going to be like, hey, by the way, your term's coming up. Here's a renewal. Basically same contract. We bumped your pay a little bit. You know, we did this. Otherwise, it's same stuff. Should be good to go. They want you to sign that because it's easy. Again, no legal fees attached to it. Everything's great. And sometimes that can be perfect. If everything's working for you, yeah, roll with it. You know, if it's making you happy, go for it. But, you know, that's normally your kind of window to start being like, yeah, I would love to discuss, you know, I would love to discuss my next contract. I really want to stay here. I really love my position here or whatever. I would love to discuss my next contract. And then at that point in time, it's kind of depends on the employer. You want to make sure that you're finding somebody that actually has authority for it. And that varies wildly. Again, you know, if it's a hospital, you want to find that it's usually the recruiter or the, I mean, it's not like your CMO or anything like that. It's somebody that is in charge of those contracts. And then if you're saying something, you just want to make sure that you're actually negotiating with someone, talking with someone that has the authority to do something with your contract. You don't want to talk to somebody and they say, awesome, I took some notes. I'll give it to, you know, somebody else, and then they'll give it to our legal team, and then we'll get back to you. Because then, and I know that sometimes that's going to be an inevitable situation, but the further you are away from the actual person with the authority, the more that's going to get lost in the in-between. So I would just kind of prioritize finding that. So once that window's open, doing that, and then, I mean, it's going to sound really cheesy, but like, don't be a jerk, you know? I know it's tough, because you know you're there and you want to fight for yourself, but you know, remember that even if they take everything that you get or that you want, you're still working, right? So they're still there. They're still your employer. They still have that relationship with you. So do your best to keep it a mutual kind of interaction and kind of explain yourself. You know, you don't have to explain yourself for everything. And this isn't like, you know, it's not explain your answer, but you know, if you're saying like, hey, yeah, you know, I'd love an extra week of PTO. You know, it just sells a lot better that if you're like, hey, you know, I'd like another week of PTO because, you know, I feel like that would really help burnout, or I would just, you know, I feel like I don't have time for vacations, or I have a family, or, you know, it doesn't have to even be something that's, you know, really concrete, but just providing something as compared to just saying like, yeah, I'm getting 5 weeks PTO. I want six. And, you know, and that's fine. that is a strategy, and it's fine, and it could work. But it's just, you know, again, the more you keep that cordial interaction, the better I think you're going to have a chance to do it. Otherwise, I mean, kind of the tips, again, it's that prioritization. And, you know, you also have to regretfully accept the fact that some of them, you're going to get pushback. You know, you're going to have some that are just going to be like, nope, we don't. So the non-competes are like a really common thing. You could go in there and say, I really don't like this non-compete. And they could be like, we are a hard line. We do not mess with our non-competes. Everybody has that non-compete. That's what it is. And then, you know, then you just feel the room, figure out whether or not you like, that's okay. Well, you know, that's really important to me. Can you push back on it? Or is that like them saying, you know, if we keep talking about the non-competes, it's going to get hostile. And also, you know, remember that it doesn't have to be a single exchange, right? You know, you have the right that if you say, you know, this is what I'd like to see in the contract, and they send you a draft of it before you sign it, read it. If it doesn't meet your expectations, or if there's something that you feel like was left out or something that wasn't done well, ask them to revise it. You know, if you have an attorney working with you on it, or if you've hired an attorney to review it, which I always recommend because it's a selfish thing, but it's also because then you don't have to deal with that yourself. And, you know, I draft contracts, so I know the little language. I know the little loops here or there that can be put in there. I can recognize when something's just not there, or it's something that's a little wonky. But if you have those, you know, draft, they can draft the language. Like, okay, no, I see that you said this here. I really prefer this language instead. It's a living document until you sign it. And it's not binding until you sign it, until both parties sign it. So, you know, it's a give and take. And it doesn't have to be, you know, they want you employed as soon as possible, just as much as you want to, right? It's, I know it's scary thinking that, oh God, you know, my contract, it terminates on May 31st, you know, oh God, I gotta get it done. Your employer's thinking the exact same thing. And remember, you know, this doesn't apply for every state. Again, I'm not offering proper legal advice at this point in time, but in a lot of cases for contracts, if the parties continue to act under it, and again, there are significant questions about certain fraud and abuse concerns for it, but if two parties that had a contract together, the contract ends and they keep going like the contract still existed, then the contract is considered to kind of still be going. So it's not going to be like May 31st hits, you're done, it's over, everything has collapsed. That's not, you know, there are remedies, there's holdovers, there's stuff like that.
Okay. Yeah. So it sounds like, just kind of recap what you're saying, I can let you drink your water again. When you get some type of notification that it's like, okay, it's within a year or whatever time frame, that start thinking about or discussing your next contract. That's kind of like the first step. Second step, I was just taking some notes, is find an authority figure. Like, don't have someone play the telephone game with your wishes within your contract. Find the right person to talk to about it. Step three is, you know, make a cordial conversation or approach the conversation with empathy. I love what you said. Don't be a jerk. Nobody likes a jerk.
It's sometimes
I really like what you said of explain yourself. So if you make a request for something, and just be honest and transparent, I feel like that can get you so far, but just in explaining what you want in life. And you might get it, you might not get it, like you said. The next step that I, you know, found is find outside help, someone like yourself. You know, once again, if a superstar athlete has a capable team surrounding him to complete his or her mission, then, you know, why not you find the same type of professional help? And then I like what you said too, for the final step, you know, it's a living document until you sign it, and it's not binding until both parties sign it. So until that happens, you're able to, you know, have open conversations with every, you know, every party involved to figure it out. So I kind of, as I was taking notes, and I was like, oh, we should put this in like a little step-by-step. Any other like negotiation tips or tricks, or was that kind of all? And no worries if not, that was a lot of great information.
No, I mean, just, I mean, honestly, it's more common than people think. And I feel like there's this kind of an assumption that everyone's just signing contracts. It's probably more of the norm that most physicians are just signing the contracts that they are provided, but it's not terribly uncommon at all for there to be back and forth negotiations. I have done multiple contracts for a hospital client for the same specialty, same position, or physician behind at the same time. And they all have different terms, because one of them thought, you know, they pushed and they fought and they got a little bit extra pay, and some other ones got like student loan benefits, you know, tied to it. And they're different contracts for that. And, you know, again, it's, once you're a second, you know, your second contract, you know, it's there, you know, you have a little bit more of that authority and you have a little bit more of that under your belt. And also, I mean, it sounds, again, pretty obvious, but if they're not budging and that's, or they're giving you a weird vibe, look elsewhere, you know, even if it's not like getting a full offer, you know, coming back and being like, hey, you know, I would love to stay here, but you know, this other place is offering me this and, you know, they're going to give me this. So, you know, this is really important to me and they're willing to give it to me. I would love to stay here, but if you're not going to give that to me, then we potentially have a problem, you know? So it's, you know, that's an ideal circumstance. And I know looking for other jobs and applying for other jobs and even just doing all that is, one, scary, two, kind of annoying, and three, it takes time that a lot of people don't have. But if you feel like, if you're in a place that has those market, that has those options, do it. I mean, it can't hurt you. But, you know, that's also, remember the non-compete component of it. Again, that's knowing your contract before you bounce with that, because they could be just sitting there like, oh, that's great, I'm glad they're offering you that, you can't go there. And then it's a whole thing. But also remember that bringing that in is going to inevitably create a bit of animosity, right? Because now you're calling them out and you're like, well, I can just leave anyway. And so it's a balance component of those, but it is a strategy. So
yeah, no, that makes total sense. And one thing that you were saying, you know, about student loans or what, you know, whatever it might be. So what other kinds of things, and I know you talked a lot about a lot of them earlier, are, you know, should one, I don't even like the word should, but could one be looking to gain within a second contract versus the first? Some of the stuff that we run into, and you already talked about some of these, maybe schedule predictability, PTO, whatever, having more of like a normal lifestyle, work, maybe working less nights, less call, those types of things. Is there anything else that you typically see that they could gain ground in a second contract versus a first contract? Or those, have we kind of touched on all of them?
I mean, we've touched on a lot of them, but like you kind of said, you know, if you're pushing for that PTO, if you want a better, more predictable work schedule, if you want, you know, if call is just driving you nuts, if you can find a way to avoid that, sometimes call is required for medical staff anyway. So you're kind of, you know, kind of stuck with it. But, you know, another, you know, if the productivity, if you don't feel like you really want to do that grind and be held to that grind, you know, see if you can't minimize it. Sometimes it's just, it's honestly site of work or your work site. So if you find that, you know, for, especially if you're in an employer that has a bunch of locations and they, let's say they have a main hospital that they, that you've been doing everything, but they've got a physician office that they're, that's under their umbrella, that's way closer to your house. Maybe see if you wouldn't, if they wouldn't be interested in, you know, you practicing there, even if it's not all the time, but, you know, switching that practice and doing those kind of things. Because then that's a quality of life thing that may be really nice for you and something that you can kind of gain. Again, if you, if that's an option, get it in right, because you want to be able to hold it to them. But I mean, otherwise, it's just, you know, it's those type of things. You know, think of, you know, when you get to this point of renewing your contract, or especially if it's at the same place, think of all the things that have been kind of annoying you or things that you would have preferred not to be the case for the last year, 2 years, 3 years, and think, okay, maybe is there a way that a contract could make those things better?
Okay.
And maybe you're a general surgeon and you found yourself like, oh God, I'm so tired of, I'm general surgery and all I'm doing is this specific type of surgery. I don't want to do that type of surgery. I want to do these types of surgery. If that's the case, see if you can't, you know, direct your specialty. See if you can't limit your contract to just those type of surgeries. Now that's a whole messier type of thing, but you know, that's the type of stuff. You know, make sure that you can make this contract involve you doing what you want to do on the terms and conditions that you actually approve of and like as much as possible. That's the ultimate goal there. And it keeps you happy. And, you know, the hope is that it will keep you happy, which will mean that you're a good employee, which means that you're not a problem and it's easy for them. So, I mean, and that's also part of it. Again, you don't be a jerk during these. You don't be a jerk as an employee.
Right.
I know that sounds really, keeping your place working class. But, you know, it's less of that. It's more of just, you know, if we have a physician that's getting a bunch of complaints and has licensing issues and all that stuff, and nobody really likes them, we're going to be a lot less prone to bending at all for them, because we kind of hope that they leave. They hope, you know, we hope that they leave, you know, it's less of a vital thing as compared to somebody that, you know, is really in indebted in there and everybody likes it. So.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. And I know earlier, this was like towards the beginning, I randomly just thought of it. You talked about how if you're like a general surgeon and it says like 95% of your duties are clinical, 5% is admin. And then you said like, if you find yourself doing maybe 20 to 30% admin or extra hours of admin, is there anything that they can do about that? Or like, what would be the like approach with that, if anything?
It's kind of pushing back and asking, you know, and that's kind of always the default is, if you find yourself doing that much, basically say, hey, you know, I feel like I'm doing, you know, I'm getting paid for my clinical stuff and I'm doing my clinical stuff, but I'm being required to do all this other administrative stuff that I feel like should be done by some type of person in administration. Why am I doing all of this? Is everybody else doing all of this? And if that's the case, you know, I either need my, you know, I want to be compensated for that. And a lot of this goes back, you know, and the best way you can kind of argue a lot of that is there are surveys out there, national surveys for physician and APP compensation. MGMA is a very big one. And basically, they have the median out there, or they have the average out there for physician compensation for every specialty you could ever imagine. And if you go there and you look at it and you're like, okay, well, my salary that I'm being paid is the median for what I'm supposed to be doing. And that's great. But that's for a full-time, you know, that's full-time general surgeon is getting paid this much. And that's how much I'm getting paid, except I'm doing full-time general surgeon, but I'm also doing like 30% of other administrative stuff. That means they're just getting this for free and they're not paying me as much as there are surgeons that are not doing that 30% and they're making just as much as me. Why? So, and again, it depends on what the type of stuff is. It depends on the type of employer, you know, physician groups. It's all kind of, you know, there's not a ton of administration for them anyway. So everybody kind of has to chip in their own part. And that's something that to consider. Hospitals, you know, they should have somebody that's handling the compliance stuff. They should have stuff, people that are handling, you know, billing and things like that. You know, you shouldn't, if it feels like something that you shouldn't be doing as a doctor, you may not be possibly you shouldn't be doing it. And if you are doing it, get paid for it. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but that's kind of the component of it. And also, you know, the big thing is try to get those services on your contract as specific as possible, because you don't want to ever have them basically say, look, you provide general surgery services here. We want you to do every type of surgery that's ever known. And again, you're like, well, I don't even know how to do these. And this is a pretty hyper-specialized surgery. And they're just like, well, you know, general surgery, it kind of covers everything. Right? It covers everything. It says surgery. And this is, you know, this is really, you know, this is brain surgery. So brain surgery, it's the same thing. It's the same type of thing. We want you to do it. And you're like, well, yeah. So have a contract that says you're not supposed to do brain surgery.
Yeah, that's interesting. So make it as specific as possible. And then a couple like last questions, and we'll see if you have any final thoughts. And I know you talked about sometimes someone from like an authority figure, someone from admin might say, okay, your contract's going to be up in a year or 6 months or whatever. Here's the auto renew. And here it is for you for your review. If I imagine it doesn't work out that smooth and perfect every time, maybe I could be wrong, but how soon should someone, like, let's say they're coming up for a renewal in the next 6 to 12 months, or maybe that's even too soon or sorry, too late. How soon should someone start to think about their contract, the renewal, start reviewing their contract, and even just start the like negotiation type conversations in advance? Like, is there a certain time frame that you typically recommend, or is that pretty specific to the individual as well?
I mean, it is going to be pretty specific to the individual and the employer, right? If it's a big health system, you need to be reasonable and expect that, you know, if you push back, right, let's say it's 3 months before your contract supposed to begin, and then they contact you or you contact them and they're like, oh yeah, here's your renewal. If you give them back feedback and say, you know, I want to talk about this, I want to negotiate, you know, that's going to go to one person, and that request is going to go to another person, and that person is going to have to be, and it's going to be a whole scheduling thing. So the time to actually change it and the time to create that new contract or go through that entire procedure may be longer than if you're, you know, in a group or something like that's four people. And you're like, okay, well, I'd like to negotiate my contract. And the guy you're talking to or the person you're talking to is like, oh, okay, let's do it. And then you're here and then it's back and forth. But, and even, you know, if you're, you know, so you want to kind of make sure you have that window. So I feel like six months is a great kind of window for it.
Okay.
Because you're going to be doing other stuff, right? You're not going to want to sit there and focus down and do those things. And, you know, you may go at it and try to do it all yourself. But if you feel like you want an attorney to look over it, then, you know, that's a perfect time to also, you know, give yourself a little bit of window to find an attorney that's competent or capable, and then have them actually review it. And then you want to make sure you have that time to discuss it with them. And then they go back and have that without any of that stress. And then last but not least, a lot of the time, you know, they're going to kind of push those deadlines a little bit on you. You know, they're going to say, hey, here's your new contract. Or if, you know, ask, they're like, yeah, let's try to get that signed, you know, in the next week or two. And that's when, you know, you have to kind of stay within those parameters in that sense, because you don't want to upset them in that sense too much. Especially if you're an avid attorney or any external component or individual looking at it, you want to make sure that they have the time and that you're not rushing through all of it. So I feel like, yeah, 6 to 8, I mean, it sounds weird. Most employers will know it's coming by that point, because they're going to want to lock you in. And they also know that there's that assumption that if you ask and then you don't hear back, and then you ask again and you don't hear back, you know, you can take it a few ways. You can take it that there may be not be another contract coming from them, which you hope that they would communicate that with. But if, you know, if you ask and you're just not getting feedback, then, you know, it may be a time to start looking out elsewhere as those opportunities. And, you know, if they finally get back to you, you could be like, okay, well, thanks for letting me know here. And then you potentially have those other negotiating components. Be like, well, yeah, you know, you took so long to get back to me. I didn't think I had a job lined up here.
Right.
So I went and looked at other places and stuff like that. So it's not an ideal circumstance, but, you know, they may, if they want to keep you, they're going to want to try to get in front of you ever thinking that you need to look elsewhere. They want to keep it between you and the employer. So, yeah. And it's kind of the same type of advantage for you. If you want to make sure that you're kind of on it and you want to take that preemptive kind of component of it, ask them at 12 months, ask them at six, you know, take that affirmative kind of stance.
Okay. So the appropriate maybe like steps is within maybe that 6 to 12 month range, maybe even 6 to 8 months, ask them for the upcoming contract. And let me know if I'm wrong. And then once you have the contract, review it either on your own with an attorney, someone like you. And then from there, move into like the negotiation type phase with the like authority figure. Would that be like an appropriate, maybe like little three-step process there? I mean, I know there's more that goes into it than that.
Yeah, exactly. And that's exactly what it is. Because then, you know, once you get them knowing, and for most health systems and most hospitals, they have a person whose basic job is to manage and deal with contracts, usually mainly of just the physicians. And if that's the case, then, you know, they're going to be ready and willing. And they're just going to add you kind of their list of ongoing kind of physicians that they're dealing with. And then you just kind of go with that. And
well,
it could be short, could be long.
One thing I forgot to add in there too is figure out which date, like when they want it signed by.
Yeah.
So then you know your time horizon as well.
Yeah.
Cool.
And
cool.
So for repeat, if you're staying with the same employer, you know, you're not going to have usually like a signing bonus for those because they already have you there. But there may be certain clauses in that contract that says, hey, if you sign back up, you know, within this time, you know, we'll give you this or retention bonuses or something like that. And
okay.
Those are just things to make sure that you're aware of before you go into it, especially if they have a deadline set to them. You want to make sure that it's adjusted for that.
Okay. Okay. Awesome. Well, this has been absolutely epic. You have so much valuable information. I promise it doesn't sound like legal jargon. I guess we'll ask the listeners. No, I'm kidding. They're going to have the best ratings they ever had in the pot. No, I'm just kidding. Anything else on your mind and no worries, like any other tips, tricks, any other mistakes you see? It's like we covered a lot. If you're feeling good, no worries whatsoever.
You know, I think I've kind of talked enough. I feel like I've chatted everybody's ear off, but you know, it is this type of stuff. You know, if you look at your contract and it does just, it's either just too much or it's, you know, if it's scary to you or if it's intimidating, it's understandable. I get it. You know, I've been looking at contracts for years of my life and I still see big ones that are just like, God, I don't want to dig through this. And this is my job. So like, if you get to that point, you know, and you just don't want to deal with it, there are people that do. And I know that's stupid. And, you know, obviously I have an interest and an investment in that, but you know, it is something that convenience. And honestly, it's also just a confirmation, right? I know the legal ins and outs of these and stuff like that. So you know that if you do decide to look into an attorney, you know, and even just ask questions to an attorney, then, or get a free consultation from an attorney, you know, it's, you know, that the hope is that they do this, that you're not going to miss anything on. And they're going to hopefully explain it to you and they're going to put it all out there and you're going to know and you're going to feel better about it. The stuff that, you know, taking this step is not easy. It's not fun. Sometimes it's really nerve wracking, but taking kind of control and taking that step, next steps into looking into your contracts and looking into what you have, it can be incredibly rewarding. And if anything, it can provide a level of comfort knowing that you're not just scrolling to the bottom of the terms and conditions and initialing and signing. You know what's in there.
Yeah.
And then if anything ever goes south, you have it. And
yep.
you're already ahead of the game in that regard. So not that everything will go south, Everything's going to be great. Everyone's profession is going to be fantastic. No malpractice for these listeners at all, or any type of coordination.
Absolutely. Love all of it. And yeah, I guess my last piece of advice would just be, you know, be methodical about the whole thing. Figure out how much time you have and be patient. I know even me, like with my partner agreement with my business partner, Jeff, and I'm like, was feeling eager, but I'm so happy that we were methodical about the whole thing. As long as you have enough time to be methodical about it, which be prepared to, you know, have the conversation, start the conversation, like we talked about, 6 to 8 months in advance. But Spencer, thank you so much. That was absolutely fantastic. I even, you know, of course, learned a ton today, which that's why I'm, you know, here. I'm so grateful to be here so I can learn myself with all the listeners. Where can any listener find you if they wanted to, you know, a free consult, or, you know, really resonated with some things you were sharing and wanted to connect with you or have you review a contract or whatever it might be?
Yeah. So again, name is Spencer Liktei. That's L-I-C-K-T-E-I-G, a wonderfully easy to spell last name. I'm here at Smith, Hoy, Rice & Rogge in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And while I do, our website is shrr.com. We do a bunch of other legal services, but our healthcare department handles a lot of physician contract reviews. And even though we're based in Michigan, a lot of this stuff it can cross state lines and everything, as long as we're not looking at super hyper specific state stuff. You know, normally I've done stuff for people in California and Maryland and Pennsylvania and North Carolina. I've worked across that, especially if it's just general reviews. Contracts are contracts where you're at. But yeah, I mean, feel free to give out or reach out and, you know, give me a contact. My email is on there. It's sliktei@shr.com. And I'd be more than happy, you know, the first communication, a pre-consultation's easy. You know, we run it by, if you have a contract already that you want reviewed, you know, you shoot it over. I look at how long and complex it is, give you an estimate, and there's no money exchanged until it's actually a representation. And then, you know, we can discuss that. But it's something that I love doing, and I'd be happy to help as much as possible. So, and if anything else, if for whatever reason, neither of those things work, you can reach out to James here and he can probably find my contact information somewhere.
I absolutely can. Well, thank you so much, Spencer. And I know Spencer's done a fantastic job for some of our clients. So appreciate you and your wealth of information. And I like that you can take complex things and simplify them. And you do better than you give yourself credit for, because you do a great job. So thank you, my friend. And everybody, we will see you on the next episode.
Before we kind of start anything, just kind of have to say this legally. Nothing that I'm saying here that's being communicated, it has any intent for actual use by individuals or entities. It's not supposed to be intended to provide legal advice or practice law through these statements. It is my own position and my own opinions on this. It is not to constitute legal advice. The contents and materials are for informational purposes only. And there is at no point in time a creation of any type of attorney-client relationship or expectation that is being included with this communication between me, the administrators, or the viewers of this.